Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
This is Biff Bepper from Saxon. You're listening to Talking Metal.
Mark Striegel, John Astronomy, the Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly. Here's your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey guys, Mark Striegel checking in with you from a cozy restaurant here in Midtown Manhattan. Just running around the city, not working today. It's Thursday, November 3rd. I was up at the Ace book signing earlier, and I was that idiot guy who got pushed to the front of the line in front of all the poor fans who'd been waiting there for hours and hours and got my book signed before anybody. Thank you, John Astronomy, for hooking that up. John and Ace doing a book signing there in New York City. It was actually Ace just doing the book signing, but John, of course, was on hand working with Ace as Ace's assistant. Pick up the book, man. It's the way you can support what we do here. If you buy a book on TalkingMetal.com, it's actually on Amazon, but what you do is go to TalkingMetal.com, buy No Regrets by Ace Frehley, and of course John Ostrowski, a.k.a. John Astronomy, and you're going to be supporting both of us because using that Amazon link on TalkingMetal.com to open up Amazon and buy the Ace book supports me. I get a small kickback on that. The book is the same price it would be anywhere else, maybe even a little cheaper. And, and you support John because guess what? This is his book. It's Ace's book, but it's his book. His name's right on the cover. So I'm also psyched that Talking Metal got a little mention on the Ace book. The Ace book, of course, is called No Regrets. So go to TalkingMetal.com. Pick your own copy up today. Cool, let's get into a little Ace right now. This is Rip It Out.
Rip it out, take my heart, you wanted it from the start. You
That was Rip It Out by Ace Frehley. You're hanging with Mark Striegel here, coming to you from New York City. Yeah, so we got, what do we got going on here? We got a new Megadeth album out, guys. Awesome. Awesome. Here it is, Public Enemy number one. Hey, that was Public Enemy number one off the new Megadeth record. We have Biff from Saxon on Talking Metal. Stay tuned for that interview. We'll get into a little new Alice Cooper right now. This is called Caffeine.
I gotta stay awake. I just can't sleep. Because I know inside. Close my eyes, it'll be the death of me.
We are all over the map musically today. We got Biff from Saxon coming up, an exclusive interview I did with him, oh, probably about a month ago in Midtown Manhattan. But right now, this is Mastodon with Dry Bone Valley.
Scarlet, good
Dry Bone Valley by Mastodon. Use the links on TalkingMetal.com to open your iTunes and buy that track. Using those iTunes links is a good thing because it supports what we do here on Talking Metal. A lot of ways you can support using those iTunes links. Even if you don't buy that Mastodon song, once it's opened your iTunes, you can shop around and we get a cutback on anything you buy. Same goes with those Amazon links. If you don't buy the Ace book, but you use the Amazon link to open Amazon, make a purchase, buy anything. I'm sure somebody out there somewhere right now is thinking of making a major purchase on Amazon. Come on, do me a favor. Use the link, man. Use the use that Ace Frehley Amazon book link. Yeah, if you don't buy the book, still make a good Amazon purchase for me. Love the Spotify. Love the Spotify. I'm not even using iTunes that much anymore myself, but was listening to Anthrax Worship Music on Spotify. I was digging it, and then suddenly it disappeared. So I think that's lame, man. I think, I don't know if that was the band directly involved in pulling their music off of there or the label, but big mistake, guys. Big mistake. I would be listening to the album. Now I'm not. And guess what? I'm not going to buy it on iTunes or in the store. I'm not buying any more fucking CDs. I took probably 400 CDs to a record store in Jersey that buys, used CDs and used albums. Great stuff. I mean, not just metal, but a lot of great metal was in there. A lot of big name metal bands were in the box of CDs. Bands like the Pixies, Living Color, you name it. Just tons of All That Remains. Just tons of CDs. Even Prince. I mean, and they wouldn't buy it. They told me this stuff was worthless. CDs, absolutely worthless. Don't buy them. Go to Spotify. Don't even do downloads anymore. I mean, if you still do, of course, use the links on TalkingMetal.com. But hey, go to Spotify, man. I shouldn't be saying that because I should be pushing you to use those links. I do the Spotify thing, the $10 subscription. $10 a month. I got, how many ever million songs Spotify has. Some major ones missing, yes. Metallica, U2. Well, no, not U2. Metallica, The Beatles, Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, but if I have the urge to listen to those bands I just mentioned are CDs that I didn't try to sell. I guess I'm going to throw my CDs out. I guess I'm throwing hundreds of CDs in the garbage. Sad, considering I've invested thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in them through the years. I will obviously hold on to Iron Maiden and Kiss and Led Zeppelin and The Beatles and probably the Stones and stuff like that, Metallica. But in general, I'm going to probably trash 80% of my CD collection. Throwing it in the garbage. Worthless. Worthless. Sad. Very sad. I was fortunate enough to get the new Saxon on CD, which of course I will be keeping because Biff signed it for me. Thanks, Biff. We're going to get into a little classic Saxon right now, followed by my interview with Biff. And then we'll get into some new Saxon. We'll end today's show with Back in 79. This is Mark Striegel checking out with you. Stay tuned for the interview with Biff. Stay tuned for the next episode. It'll be a CC Banana exclusive. I don't even think I'm going to be on it. Probably just be CC taking over the airways. I actually loaned him my recorder. He was going to interview Cinderella back over the summer when Cinderella played. And when I got the recorder back, he said, the files are on there. But surprisingly or not surprisingly, no Cinderella interview. Funny stuff anyways, and I'll probably air that for you next time, guys. Here's a little Saxon followed by my interview with Biff. Yeah. Hi, it's Mark Striegel from Talking Metal, and we are here with Biff from Saxon. Biff, thanks so much for taking the time out to speak to us today.
Yeah, it's good to be here, sat in New York, doing interviews.
You have a big show tomorrow at BB King's. I saw you there probably about 2 years ago when you were in town. And that, if I believe, you guys just did a handful of dates in the States back in 2009. This is a more extensive tour for sure, right?
Yeah, we did three shows. I think we did New York, Houston, and San Antonio. So it was just a quick in and out, which is what we've been doing up to this tour. But yeah, this tour is a more comprehensive in support of the album. We haven't done this for quite a long time, touring at the same time the album release, which is great.
So how has it been getting back to some of the cities and towns that you haven't been to for a while? Are the fans hungry for their Saxon?
Yeah, it's been great, actually. I mean, the response on the new album's fantastic, and the audience have been great. I mean, the West Coast was a big surprise, because we haven't been there for 20 years, so, wow. You know, sort of like trying to, you know, get our fan base back to see us. It's, yeah. Is you know, sometimes a problem, but it was great, and you know, it's been great so far. We haven't really had a bad show, actually.
Cool. And the new album sounds great. It's called Call to Arms. Some of these songs to me seem really timeless, and it made me wonder: are these all like brand new songs that you wrote recently, or some maybe in the vaults that you pulled out?
No, they're all new songs. We went back to trying to get back into an 80s zone for some of the songs we wrote. Especially with the lyrics I did. So, yeah, a bit more working class, a bit more down to earth, road warrior type lyrics, and which is a great title for a song, by the way. I must put that down. It is a move back to a more organic recording technique, definitely. And, you know, we concentrated on getting the sounds great and then recording them. Rather than having loads of overdubs and Pro Tools samples and things going on, you know. Obviously, it's a digital album, but we just recorded it more basic, really, and tried to get back to our roots, our influences.
And Back in 79 is a great song, by the way, and it seems like it's a real tip of the hat to the early days of Saxon's career. Do you have fond memories of those days?
Yeah, we have really fond memories. I mean, back in 79... It's a bit like Denim Leather Revisited, I suppose. It's a very similar drum beat, obviously different guitar riff. But yeah, it's a song that connects new fans and old fans together. And, you know, if you listen to the lyrics or read the lyrics, you'll understand where I'm coming from, really.
And speaking of lyrics, earlier you mentioned a working class, did you say working class vibe or working man vibe? There's the Ballad of the Working Man, which I think is just a great song that is on the record. And I wanted to ask you about those lyrics. Take me back to a simple life. What do those lyrics actually mean to you?
Well, I think the song, you know, it's basically set against a backdrop of a lot of unemployment in Britain, and obviously in the US, in that respect, the countries are linked, aren't they? There's a lot of... and I just think that it's a song about, you know, when everybody's working and the country's strong. That's really what I'm saying. And, you know, we're just saying that the common working man who works down the coal mine or works on the docks or works in the police or just anybody who works, you know, hard work for a living... Basically, they're making the country strong, they're paying taxes, the country becomes, you know, more powerful because of that. And I think, you know, when I was younger, that was how it was. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a little bit, you know, like goes back to the 60s, I suppose.
Right, sure.
You know, when things were, like, great and the future lay in front of us all, you know.
Right.
All that thing happened. I mean, I was, like, quite a young guy in the 60s, so... you know, it was just seemed to be a time of revolution. You know,
there are two versions of, at least on the CD that I have. There are two versions of the title track, "Call to Arms." One actually has orchestration. It sounds like strings on it. Who actually arranged the strings, and how were they recorded?
Well, it's the German guy that does a lot of our sort of arrangements. Did our last album. He did all the pieces of choir that we have on Battalions of Steel. We're in the process of scoring all our songs, our anthemic songs, for orchestra.
Oh, wow.
So there is talk of us doing an orchestra gig in the future and an album and DVD from it.
Cool.
Whether it'll ever happen or not, I don't know. But, you know, this guy does orchestration. He scores everything. Some of it's real violins. Some of it's obviously samples. But, yeah, he just did this for us and we loved it. I just sent it to him as an experiment, really, to see what he'd do with it. And it came back, and I thought people should hear both versions, because a lot of rock music that's put to symphonic treatment doesn't sound great. It doesn't seem to fit. Where I think this one fits perfect, so I thought I'd let people listen to it. And it does bring a more majestic flavor to the song.
Definitely. Now, also on this record, When Doomsday Comes and Mist of Avalon, you have a very special guest keyboardist. Can you tell us who that is and how you know him?
Well, Don Airey. We know Don Airey from, obviously, from Ozzy Osbourne days. And a lot of he was the premier keyboard player in the 80s. He was on everybody's album. You know, we see him a lot. We play a lot with Deep Purple in Europe. We keep doing festivals together. And we were in the queue at the American Embassy in London and got chatting about old times. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, we've got a couple of songs on the new album. Actually, we had one song at that point, Mists of Avalon. I said, if you want to play on it, you know, you can. And, yeah, he's a huge fan, so, yeah, he played on that. And later on when we wrote the When Doomsday Comes for the film, we asked him to play on that as well.
Very cool. And I also, on this American version, this may be on the European version, I'm not sure, but I was under the impression it was just the American version. It comes with the live CD. Can you tell us a little bit about where and when this live CD was recorded?
Well,
and
yeah, it was recorded our very first big festival in England in 1980, the Monsters of Rock, Donington, which seems to have took on huge historic proportions. Basically, for us, we were the sort of new guys on the block on this festival because everybody else was established. So this was our first major festival. It was the first festival that any of the, you know, new wave producers, like Maiden or Leopard, it was the first one of the bands that played a major festival. So it's a snapshot of the England in 1980, really. So people are interested in that period. It's a shame Maiden weren't on the same bill, or Def Leppard in them days, but, you know, we were the ones that were on it. And an old manager sent us an email saying he got some old tapes in his attic. We thought the multi-tracks were lost forever.
Wow.
And
so they were multi-tracks, you could go back and mix them, actually.
Yeah, 2-inch tapes from the original Studio Machines, that Rolling Stones Mobile, I think.
Wow.
And there was one of the tapes was the Donington, and nobody had heard it for 30 years, so it was a bit special when we heard it.
Yeah.
And it sounded great. So we mixed it, and we thought we'd give it away with the album, basically, just as a connection between then and now.
Cool. Now, we mentioned that Don plays on two tracks on the Call to Arms record. I wanted to go way back and ask you about another keyboardist who played on two tracks on the Rock the Nation album, Elton John. How did you get Elton on your record? Was he a friend of yours?
Not really, no. I mean, he's obviously a great musician, songwriter. But no, our producer knew him. And we had a song called Party to You Puke, which we thought would be, to get him to play that would be a bit of a rebel thing to do, you know. But, yeah, he just carried his piano in and played it. And then it was just jamming on the other song, actually, Northern Lady, so, which we recorded, luckily. But, yeah, he was a nice guy. We actually knew his band more than we knew Elton, because I think at that time there was a royal wedding going on. I think it might have been Prince Andrew. So it was like helicoptering in and out all the time onto the lawn in front of the studio. So Yeah, it was nice actually. We had a good laugh, you know, when he did it. He's a professional.
Now you have a book called Never Surrender, and I just wanted to ask you, as a fan, it's very hard to find this book in the United States. Mm. Has there been any talk about maybe doing like a re-release for the American audience?
Well, yeah, it's very hard to get into with that publisher. I think he lives in a cave somewhere in Germany. But we'd love to release it in America. I think it would do great because it covers, it's basically an autobiography of mine, really. It's not totally Saxon, but it goes right through the years, you know, right through the infamous Motley Crue first tour we did, sure. And you know, all through that period, right up to now, really. So I think it would be great released in America. I think people would be interested. I think we could sell a few thousand copies, definitely.
Definitely. Without a doubt, definitely. Speaking of those early days, Metallica, I think, got some of their first breaks opening for you guys, if I recall correctly, on the West Coast back in the early days. And I know you even recently, maybe three years ago, got on stage and jammed Motorcycle Man with them. Yeah. Are you in contact with them at all? Do you ever hear from Lars or James?
Yeah, we were sort of in contact quite recently, actually. They were going to come see us in the Bay Area, but they couldn't get Sears. But, I mean, they basically quarters as one of their main influences, which is great. They played the Whiskey A Go-Go with us two shows, and I think Rat did the other day. It was a great moment, really. I think because we were one of their influences, they wanted to play with us. I think they sort of, you know, did everything they could to get a show there.
And speaking of Saxon fans like Metallica, I was shocked to hear that Lady Gaga is a Saxon fan. Were you surprised to hear that?
Actually, Lady Gaga is a metal fan. She's not just a Saxon fan. She loves Priest, Saxon, Maiden, everybody, really. She really is, an aficionado of the music, really. I think she, in her early days, I think they did a sort of a metal review thing, her and Lady Starlight. So I think that's where her sort of love of the metal music comes from. But yeah, she's a huge fan. Yeah.
Cool. And you met her at one point, or?
Yeah, we went to see her. I was taking my daughter to see the show, but my daughter sort of had a boyfriend problem, so she didn't go. So I went there with our agent, and we just went to see the show, you know, and we were hanging about at the backstage bar. It was a huge show. And, we got the manager came and he said they'd like to meet you. So that's how we got to meet, really.
Cool.
She's coming tonight, though.
Yeah, I don't know if she... Yeah, well, she lives in the area, so you never know. Yeah. I'll let you go, but I quickly just wanted to ask you about a rumor. There was a rumor online that you were actually... and maybe it's not a rumor, maybe it's fact, but were you actually campaigning to have people declare heavy metal as their religion in the United Kingdom census?
Yeah, the last census they had 10 years ago, a lot of people put down Jedi Knight. So Jedi Knight became an official religion. I think you need 100,000 people or something. So Metal Hammer, the magazine in the UK, wanted to do that, try and get heavy metal as a religion. So they made me the ambassador of peace for the religion. It's fair enough, you know.
Are you do you believe in religion? Do you believe in God?
Yeah, I'm quite religious. Yeah, I'm not really a church goer, but I do believe in a sort of, you know, other being, yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, Biff, thanks so much. And if we could get you saying your name, your band, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Yeah. This is Biff Baffert from Saxon. You're listening to Talking Metal. We'll be right back.
And now